Hey, what's good? What's good? We back. The one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast. This is episode 153. We got a special guest that's going to be joining us. We got Sean Mikes, artist from Massachusetts. So we're going to get into the sponsors real quick, and then we're going to get straight into the interview.
Me and my team are never be link up. They're gonna be drink up. We sit down and relax and have few glasses when there's things to think about. Like I'm nice with the boss when I tend to the bars and I'm not talking drink up. So tell the bartender that tend to the bar to please pass me a big cup up. And tell that waitress is waiting on us to put a little ice in it. Now watch the ice become weightless like the spaceships that I be sitting in. No waiting, listen, another waiting for that tropical twist that'll tickle your taste buds. Now taste up. Now I insist it's the drizzle.
That's right, that's right. That was Chip Fu, legendary Fu Snickens artist, doing the Dizzle brand commercial. Do you Dizzle? Yes, we Dizzle. Check them out, DizzleBrand.com. But we're going to get to it. We're going to bring in our guest, Sean Mikes. What's good? What's good? Can you
What's
hear
good,
me, brother?
Bro? What's good? Yes, sir. I can hear you.
What's good? Yeah, I've been meaning to have more guests on this podcast, and you being a fellow hip-hop head, you know, I felt like it was only right.
I appreciate it, bro. I appreciate you having me on.
How'd you get started in the making music?
Shit. So I think like the first rap I ever wrote was in like the fourth grade. So like I got introduced to rap music through my older brother, who's like 8 years older than me. So he kind of showed me all that good shit growing up. That's why like now when you listen to me rap, it might have some more old school influence than like the new school shit. You know what I mean? So I just would always be listening to rap, always, like every single day listening. And I was like, you know what? I want to try and do this shit, you know?
Now, did you always listen to hip hop music first? Like for me, I actually listened to like Michael Jackson pop and then rock and roll. And then I got into hip hop because of Heavy D. Was it always hip hop for you?
So pretty much like I got introduced to rap when I was in like kindergarten. So from my older brother being so much older than me. So before that, it was just like whatever my parents would be playing in the house, you know, like some Bob Seger, you know, some Aerosmith, like classic rock, stuff like that.
Okay, that's the stuff I kind of, you know, started with. And I think I just kind of basically, I lived in Panama, got back from the States, and I just kind of went with what was popular. And then I heard Heavy D, and it was like a total change. Was there any particular artist that really got you there, or was it just a group of artists? Or
so yeah, I would have to say like the Aftermath era, that's what really got me on. That's what my brother showed me at first. So when you're getting introduced to like some of the greatest of all time, like in their prime at the time, you know, so like Dre, you got M, then 50 Cent, G-Unit, all that shit, you know, like when I was in kindergarten at that time, that's when they were all popping.
Okay.
And I had the stranglehold on the game. So I got introduced to that, then I just kind of deep dove afterwards, you know, going back to all the classics.
Now, in your opinion, is Dr. Dre the greatest executive producer ever? In my opinion, he is.
I think so, too. And he doesn't have, like, mad albums, but, like, all his albums, they're, like, sonically, like, beautiful.
You know
what I mean? And let alone, like, he has artists in literally, like, every single decade from the 80s.
Yeah.
Now, you know what I mean?
He definitely set a standard that there wasn't before, you know, because they didn't expect no hip-hop artist to have that great quality of album, you know. Yep. And they expected from like a rock artist, a country, and the fact that it was a hip-hop artist, it really raised the bar, set the standards for all genres going forward, I would say. Wouldn't you agree?
Sure. I agree. And like the artists that he would put on, like they were like staple artists, you know what I mean? From NWA to Snoop to M to Kendrick, you know what I mean? Like these are all like very well proclaimed artists, you know what I mean? Like,
and all of them had probably the biggest impacts of debuts ever, you know?
Yeah.
Snoop, M, yep. 50, Kendrick.
Yep, exactly.
So you being that's crazy. You're a Massachusetts guy. And it was really West Coast cats that kind of won your heart over with hip hop.
Yeah, but that's when I like first started listening to it. Then I got into all of it, you know, like the Nas, Hove, Rakim, like a whole, like it just the blend of everything, you know. Because when I started listening to rap, it was like early 2000s, I'm only 26. So it was like the early 2000s. And by that time, there has been so much classic hip hop shit that has been dropped, you know? So I had a lot to go back on.
How'd you come up with your name, Sean Mikes?
So my name is Sean and my middle name is Michael. And like my whole life, my mom always called me Sean Mikes, like M-I-K-E-S. But then obviously had to add some that hip hop flavor to it. So just
so it's kind of like Titty Boy. Like his grandma gave him his name.
Yeah.
And then he changed it.
Yep.
Without naming you yourself, because you know a lot of rappers are always going to name themselves, who would you say is the top artist or artist in the game right now?
Right now? Shit. It's tough. Kendrick just dropped a fucking phenomenal album.
What was your opinion on that?
I like the album a lot. He said a lot of shit. He dug into a lot of introspective stuff. That's the kind of rap that I like the self-reflection, like being able to deep dive into your own like subconscious type shit, you know. And I really like the album, and he's one of the only dudes that you cannot see him for 5 years, then literally like not see him on social media and nothing, and come out and drop and still push like over 200,000 units, you know.
Now, I've always said that Kendrick has benefited from not oversaturating himself like Drake or a Cole, you know. Yep. Now, back on this album, though, do you feel like this? Some people were saying this album was like I don't know if you remember when Rick Ross left. He was on a label and he was trying to get the Epic, so he just pushes out this album real quick, like. And a lot of people were saying that this was him pushing out, you know, the last TDE album to get, you know, free from them and do his own thing. I don't strongly agree with that. I feel like the fans sometimes can they lose in that, because I honestly don't really like this album because of the production, because I'm always start with the production.
Yeah.
If I can't really feel the beats. And Kendrick he's great lyrically. You know, nobody's denying that, but I've always been a strong component of production first.
I know, especially him being under Dre, you know, like.
It didn't sound like Dre had a lot to do with this album at all, did it?
That's what I'm
thinking. Do you think that could be a good thing or a bad thing? Because I think it could be a bad thing, because Dr. Dre having hands on to any album is going to make it, I would think, greater than it is.
Yeah, but I feel like at the same coin, if Dre's working on your album, it could delay it much more.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, because like he's one of those perfectionist types. So
you're right.
It's now, one of those like double-edged sword type deals.
What about Cole? Because I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina. My apartment's actually like probably like 2 minutes away from where J. Cole grew up.
Yep.
And it's really a mixed review here on Cole. You know what I'm saying? But I've actually put Cole above Kendrick now because of this last album. I
think I might be inclined to agree with you, because Cole kind of stepped away from like being that like, oh, I make my own beats, no features, like none of that shit. Like he already did all like huge records doing that. And this one, like his last album was filled with bangers, I think. Yeah. You know? And like you said, where you start with the production, like the beat production on that was fucking fire.
Yeah, and like I said, in Fayetteville, we've had a mixed review, and I think a lot of that has to do with some people feel like he should do more for the city. Do you feel like all artists are obligated to give back to the city?
I mean, it's one of those things, like, how big was it for, like, where was the city to get him where he was? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's the biggest artist we've ever had. So
I'm hip to that. I'm hip to that. But like, how much push did they actually give him before he had to go to New York?
That's the thing. Cole moved out of North Carolina and went to Fayetteville. I mean, out of Fayetteville to New York, and he blew up in New York. So we knew him as another name, which was the Therapist.
Yep.
We knew him as the Therapist. That's what I knew him as. And then when he comes out as J. Cole, nobody had any idea who J. Cole was out of Fayetteville until, you know, cats that knew him from like albums previously, because he was on albums that were in the Source magazine back in the days when he had unsigned hype and stuff. We started putting two to two together, like, oh, that's the Therapist. Yeah, but nobody knew. Like, he literally had no fan base when he started, just like our other artist out of Fayetteville, Moray, you know? So I think it goes to show you that artists can still make it solely off of just putting out good music or great music.
Yeah, especially now, like with the whole like streaming shit, like you get put in playlists, you're getting listened to in places that you've never even been before. You know what I mean? And it's more likely than it's gonna be more plays over there than where you are here. Because like over here, you're just seen as this like regular dude. Like these people know you as you. You know what I'm saying?
And what part of Massachusetts you from again?
So I grew up in Weymouth, Massachusetts.
How far is that from Boston?
It's about 15 minutes away.
Oh, that's right there. Yeah. And what's the music scene like in Boston or around that area?
So there's always been wicked dope rappers, but it's like we're so close to New York that I feel like we're like caught in that shadow of New York. Because there's like a bunch of fire artists that do it independently. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of people in New England in general, because it's kind of all grouped into one over here, that make bread off this, make a living off of it independently. But there's only a few that really popped off, you know, like Millie's right now. He's like going off crazy.
I was checking his record the other day. It's kind of reminds me of the Pop Smoke sound and whatnot. Yep.
Then Joyner Lucas as well.
Oh, okay. I'm a big Joyner Lucas fan. I'm glad you brought him up.
So he's from Worcester. That's another city like a little out west in Massachusetts, but it's, you know what I mean?
I think Joyner Lucas was a prime. I watched his journey. I think it was a prime example of if you just focus on the content.
Yep.
And make sure all the content is just up to par, you're good to go. You know, if you look at all the top cats in the game, and we just said Kendrick, Cole, I mean, you could probably throw in Drake, Kanye, Big Sean. They all are like not the most gangsterous rapper, drug dealer rapper, shoot them up, bang, bang. I think like substance, real substance is always still going to be like at the very top, you know?
Yep.
There just might not be a large portion of it.
Yep. What's cool actually is like that mixtape that Joyner really blew up on, that Along Came Joyner shit. Like that was produced by this producer from Weymouth that has been around forever, like from my city. You know what I mean? They linked up and kind of fucking blew up.
I think Joyner Lucas is the greatest concept rapper I've ever seen in my entire life.
His videos, like I swear he just like writes these songs and has the video already in mind. So
yeah, he scripts it out and then he writes the song around it. It reminds me of Nas Rewind.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time, and he did that song backwards where he rapped backwards
and it rhymed the whole way. Both ways. It's crazy.
But even a cat like Joyner, as much as I love him, he's losing my attention. And do we blame the fan or the artist when that happens?
I mean, it could be a little bit of both. I feel like fans are spoiled these days. They expect an album every six months.
I'm expecting a Will every time, right?
So a new record like every 6 months. And honestly, like for you to sustain like that dope shit, like it's going to take a little longer than that.
It is hard to probably do another Will, right? Like, that's one of the greatest concept records I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was crazy. That video was stupid, too.
Now, let me ask you this. You come from the appreciation of the 90s gold, as they call it, the golden era.
Yep.
And I've dealt with a lot of old school rappers. I've booked shows for Flip Mode, Sick Rick, Dougie Fresh, Houdini. Mm-hmm. Do you think old schoolers have their bitterness towards the new school, do you think that's valid and fair at all?
I feel like once again it goes both ways, because like I feel like before, like in their era, they gave props to all the people before them. Now they're just like, nah, fuck Tupac, he's boring.
Is that the main issue you think they have, is that they not getting, nobody's recognizing them before? But I also like when you go into this component of F you, little new rapper, you know, you ain't showing no love to the, like, how are you supposed to win them over, you know?
Yeah, nah, I feel the same way, because I feel like I used to view myself that way. Just like, oh, fuck these corny rappers, you know what I mean? But it's just like, bro, at the end of the day, these are all young people just trying to get out of whatever situation they are, make bread from making music. If you can do that, salute to you. You know? But
wasn't some of the cats in the 90s, when you go back and listen to them, wasn't some of those cats really corny too, if not cornier?
They could have been, you know?
Like, because I go back and listen to some albums and, you know, I feel like we might have been a prisoner of the moment of the majority of those albums, you know, because me personally, My number one album of all time is Mobb Deep Infamous.
Oh, that's
my standard.
Yep, yep.
Because my standard of an album is how many times do I skip a song? Like, the more you skip and the more you skip, the less I say it's a classic or it's great or it's just good or it's just average.
Yep.
You know?
Completely agree.
Do you think hip-hop is straying down the wrong path nowadays?
I mean, I'm not one to judge. I feel like you can, there's so much different hip hop like everywhere that if like you don't appreciate what this path is doing, you can find 100 other artists doing it this way. You know what I mean? They might not be the most popping people, but there's a lot of ill people out there that some people know, some people don't, you know.
I know Dre and them said it's nothing but music, but sometimes like it's glorified in a sense where like Chicago gangster rappers, for example, it's like we glorify a little too much, don't we? That like the consequences are just there. I mean, if I've looked this up on Wikipedia, if you look at like hip hop murders, the first one was Scott LaRock, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from that was like way back in the days, like the 80s. You look from like 87 to 2000, it was like maybe 5-10 total. You know, you had Pac and Big just like that. Yep. But it got to 2000 where it's like every year, rappers are just getting killed over and over, man. And I just have to really blame this glorification of being a gangster, man. I mean, it's one thing to be infatuated with a gangster movie, but do we got to go and glorify it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I feel you. I feel like a lot of those people, though, like making those records, they're just rapping about what they come from, you know?
Do you think they're all rapping where they come from, or they're just rapping? Some of them might be just rapping because it's the cool thing to do.
I'm sure that's the case, you know? But
I mean, because we do know that not all rappers have been the
most
authentic, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there'd be a lot of dead bodies if everybody was rapping like that, was like that, you know?
So what do you want? What would you like people to know about Shawn Mikes that we don't really know?
Shit. Well, I launched my own label last year. I got two other artists signed under me, Easty and my boy CXP. We just been grinding out. Like,
what's that like? Cause it's not. As a promo guy. See, I started as an artist.
Yep.
And then I got into celebrity bookings. And I got in the radio and I got in these things to benefit myself as an artist.
Yep.
You know, but then I got into management because somebody asked me to manage them.
Yep.
And things went well at first, but it's like one of the most difficult things to do is deal with another artist, I realized. How have you learned how to navigate through that?
Well, the good thing is, like, they were my homies before. You know what I mean? Especially Easty, like me and him go back like a long time. Like he put me on some shit when I was younger, like coming up in Weymouth. He's a little older than me, but like I feel the biggest thing is just trying to manage egos. You know, at the same time, you gotta like some person might feel some way, and you just gotta know that they're coming from a certain direction, and you might be coming from a different direction, but you can't just like put your ego in front of it. And just be like, nah, this is my shit. I want to do it this way. You got to throw all that shit out the window, you know, because it's no longer like if I criticize myself or like some song that I do that I don't like, I'm just like, whatever, I'm not going to put it out. But if they're feeling a certain way about the joint and maybe I'm just not saying that this has happened, but I'm just saying like.
Now, repeat that again, what you just said about you criticizing the song. I want to feed on that real quick.
So, like, for me, like, if I criticize...
You'll criticize their song, right?
Well, that really hasn't came to the point, but what I'm saying is, like, if I were to criticize my shit, I would just throw the song out the window if I didn't like it. But for them, like, I got to take them into accountability, how they feel about the joint, like, how they think this is going to move, you know?
No, don't, because the reason I want to feed off of that, I think that's a problem with hip-hop nowadays is... We got so many artists got too many homeboys around them that always, as soon as they make a song, they automatically, yo, it's a hit. It's no real, like, I had a homeboy back in the days that would be like, look, man, I'm going to tell you the nicest way possible, man. You be killing, murdering the beat, you be micro-machining it, but every beat ain't meant to be micro-machined. Yep. I think musicians, like, definitely never want to hear criticism, and I think that's a big problem.
It's because... Yeah, it's just one of those things, man, that like you create like this picture, you know what I mean? Or create this song, whatever. Like the last thing you want is someone to be like, nah, that ain't it. You know, because you put what like however much of you into that, then it's kind of extension to you at that point. And just be like, nah, that's not it. It's tough. But it's one of those things that you got to deal with, though.
Yeah, because in a single game, when you're really saying, nah, that's not it, you're really saying this ain't the single or this ain't the hit.
Yeah, it's not that it's a bad song.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's not a good album cut. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that's what people fail to realize when people are like, nah, that's not the one. No, we're not necessarily saying it ain't a good record to still put out.
Yep.
But it's not the album cut. Now, do you think I'm a strong opponent with the biggest problem with artists trying to make it in the business is they don't know the second part of the business. There's making music and breaking
then
music.
Then the business, you know.
And the breaking music part, what confuses me is it's like, this is our first time having a conversation, right?
Yep, yep.
If me and you get together and start a pizza joint, you best believe one of us going to know how to make pizzas. And the other's going to be taking the orders. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And I feel like too many artists are like, guys starting a pizza joint and don't know how to make a pizza. Like making music's, that's just the easiest, simplest step of it. And I feel like this whole other part of it is just like they don't know it, and or they choose not to know it, or they think it's not a business. What do you think that is? I mean, you think we need like college courses on this or something?
Shit, that would be great. Well, I think like most, because artists are artists, you know, all they want to do is create. Like
all they want to do is create.
They got into this just to create. Then like maybe they start building a buzz and realize like, hey, I could actually do something with this. But like they still just want to create and create only. And that's going to be detrimental to anyone, you know?
Yeah. And I also think one thing that's always held hip hop back is if you look at rock groups, rock bands, we could put a rock band together and just have them do cover music and put them on tour.
Yeah.
Hip hop is always frowned on cover music.
Yeah.
And performing cover music. And it's the only genre taken literally. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure, man. I think because like biting was like a huge thing back in the day. Like, yo, you bit my shit. This is my shit. Like it rocked like they like would cover their favorite songs. Like they can add their own twist to it. I guess when like your instrument is your voice, like it's easier to pass off as it's yours than it's like, this is like this song and I'm adding my turn to it, you know?
But wasn't when the vocabulary was real low in the '80s, weren't they all pretty much biting?
I don't know, man. I mean, because
it was really like, it was really limited in the '80s when you compare it to like the '90s and then started using all types of big words in the '90s and stuff, the Karis ones, the Public Enemies and stuff. Who do you think's been like the most impactful groups or artists ever in hip hop to you?
Ooh, to me personally, or
Public
like
just personally, or just that you've seen, like just watching history, that like Public Enemy to me has always been one of the biggest impacts ever.
Yeah,
because they changed like anybody who I think made. I know this is another one. This might sound crazy. I think Crisscross was one of the biggest impact groups in hip hop history. Because I know when I was in high school, they literally brought in sagging pants.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
It literally everybody was sagging pants. Then like Public Enemy had everybody wearing the African beads and chains.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I felt like anybody that had that chain that made everybody just dress a certain way or act a certain way, or like Schoolboy Q when he comes out with that part.
I didn't
understand it at first, you know, when they came out with it. I just love Schoolboy Q, and everybody's like, that part.
And same with the buckets, bro, like the bucket hats. I feel like he was rocking those early, then kind of everyone caught on to that.
You said Schoolboy Q?
Yeah.
I never really caught on to that.
At least where I live, like I know it's different everywhere. But so for me, I think Hov maybe.
Like, Hov, okay.
He got everyone to stop wearing jerseys, bro. Fucking get a crisp pair of pants, homie, button up, like dissing Joe Budden at the same time. But he tried to he put an end to like the jerseys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He tried to put the end to auto tune, but that obviously didn't work.
That didn't work. I said that too. I said the same thing. He didn't do a damn good job of that
at all.
White rapper. Does a cat like Eminem make it easier, or do you think he makes it harder?
I mean, that's the thing, like, because there is a lot of white rappers, you know what I mean?
A lot more than when I first come up, a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. But I feel like Eminem being dope was easier to come out after Eminem than it were to come out after, like, a Vanilla Ice type deal, you know what I mean? Because it gives you, like, that glimpse of hope. It's like, oh, this dude actually might be nice, though. Because, like, if you look at, like, around the time with Vanilla Ice, they're like, ah, nah, this guy's the vulture type shit, you know?
Yeah, well, he was riding that MC Hammer wave, too, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know? Yeah. It was like the Elvis of fucking rap at that time.
Yeah. What's your take on a cat like Everlast?
Everlast? I like Everlast. I like how we kind of branch out to more than just rap. You know what I mean?
I did, too.
Because I like, growing up right outside of Boston, like, I'm a huge Slane fan. Like, he's big around here. But he's in that group, La Coca Nostra, with Everlast. So, like, I got, like, acclimated with that type of shit. Where, like, it was, like, after the Whitey Ford stuff. But then, like, this group is, like, a super hardcore, like, underground rap group. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely look like you could be part of Nonfiction and Ill Bill crew. And I'm definitely big on Ill Bill whatnot, you know?
Yep,
when they came up with their album, I thought it was totally huge.
Yep.
So basically, your goal is you want to make it as a solo artist, and you try to help your two other artists. Now, as your two other artists, are you doing all the marketing promotions for them too?
Yeah. And obviously, they're helping out on their end too. Okay. It's not just a one-sided deal. But I got this studio back in January. Like my whole album that I just released, The Little Things, I recorded all that in my room, like in my bedroom. Uh-huh. But I just got this space, so now it's on. Like, we can all just link up in here 24/7 and just, like, get to recording, you know?
And what kind of influence do, like, rappers like Guru or Big Shug have over, like, Boston area?
So, I love Gangstar. That's my
shit. I
do,
too. I love,
like,
Gangstar.
Like, Premier is probably one of my favorite producers of all time. I just got that East Coast bias type thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't even know that Guru was from here because he always rapped New York.
He always claimed New York mainly, right?
Yep.
And what about cat like Big Shug? Because I know he was in that Black Mass movie with Whitey Bulger.
Yep. So he's always around. Like, you'll be able to, like, see him around the city, which is dope. You know, like, okay. He's an accessible type of dude.
And y'all had Ed OG. Does he still be around the way at all?
Oh, yeah.
Ed OG, okay.
Yep.
And what about, okay, I want to get into a little sports real quick.
Of course.
Celtics.
Oh, let's go.
I got Celtics in like 5 or 6, man, after last night's game.
Honestly, after these last series, man, I think it could go 7. Who knows? You know, just...
I'm a strong opponent. The Warriors are in danger because this is my take. I'm comparing the two best Celtics versus the two best Warriors.
Yep.
So I'll take Tatum and Brown, and I'm looking at, they're two-way players.
Yeah.
And they can both put up 25 or 30 on a night.
Yep.
Well, when I go to Golden State, you got Steph and Klay.
Yep.
They're not two-way players. And Klay's not – he tries, but that injury, two injuries.
Yep.
No, so they're not two-way. And – I'm of a component. Klay's not a 25 every night guy no more.
Yep.
So I just think, like, Boston, they got experience. They got depth. They got youth. They got two-way players. Way more two-way players.
The depth is definitely true. Like, Al Horford, like, has been stepping it up. They keep calling him the old man every time I watch the game. But, like, dude's, like, dropping almost 30. You know what I mean? Like.
Now, is all of Massachusetts pretty much Celtics fans?
Yeah, pretty much.
And y'all pretty much going to go crazy and nuts if y'all win this, right?
Yeah, man, it's been a long time. 2008, that was the last one.
Yeah, because it's really just y'all and the Lakers, right? It's y'all competing with the Lakers.
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and you've always been a Celtics fan?
Yeah. I mean, I came up at, like, the perfect time in, like, New England and Boston sports, you know. Tom Brady came in 2001 and started winning Super Bowls. Then the Red Sox, they ended up beating the Curse of the Great Bambino type shit, you know.
Can we agree that Boston is probably highly overlooked and doesn't get enough respect?
Yeah, I could say that. Because there are some, like, dope
y'all people. Y'all had y'all's major artist.
Yeah,
Yep. All y'all sports teams have been highly successful.
And I noticed, bro, like all the people that come and tour here, like the market is huge. Now, I don't know if it's like that East Coast mentality type thing where it's just like, oh, he's from here. Like, I'm from here. I could do that shit type thing. So I don't know. You know, all I've ever known is living here.
Movies y'all have, The Town. Yeah. Y'all have all these Boston-made movies. Yep. And one thing I realized, it's like the one accent in America that actors are like, it's the top-notch accent to try to do, man.
Oh, man. Listening to that shit is so brutal sometimes. You ever see the show Ray Donovan?
His wife
absolutely butchers that accent for about fucking 8 seasons, and it like literally killed me every single time, you know.
Yeah, y'all got a lot going. I mean, y'all got a lot going on, man. A lot going on. How old are you two?
I am 26.
You're 26.
Yes, sir.
What do you see, because I grew up in the 90s era. What is it that leads these newer cats to appreciate this 90 era more when there's not so much of those artists on the mainstream spectrum? They're just not easy to find all the time, man.
Yeah. So for me, like, it's because I had a brother that was grew up in the 90s. You know what I mean?
It's just totally your brother.
Then that's totally just like the groove that I fell into. Then I deep dove into that shit. Then like broke off into like the independent rap shit and just found like so many artists. You know,
what about a cat? Like, I'm just interested. Like, what a cat? What do you think about a cat like Jack Harlow?
Jack, like, he's pretty nice. I mean, that's not really the shit that I listen to all the time.
Yeah.
But like, he's not like the worst rapper I've ever heard.
Yeah,
he's not
yeah.
The best rapper, like, he's pretty good. But
he's better than most, though. You would say, right, nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. Like on the mainstream level, you know.
And you, how long you think this wave is gonna last? This.
I don't know. Like, I feel like his first album was received pretty well.
No, I mean, like, the wave of this new sound, man. Like,
I don't know. Like, it's already transitioned so much.
It seems like it's went longer than usual, right?
But I feel like it, like, has variated because, like, in, like, 2000, like, the 2010s, you had, like, the Chirac shit, which was, like, these style beats, but, like, it's different. You know what I mean? Then you got the drill shit. Now you have, like the melodic type shit. So it's already changed so much within like that the past 10 years, you know what I mean? So who knows where it's going to go next.
And a lot of people think the 90s was more original, right? I disagree. I'm more of a component. It's more original nowadays, but it's trashier because of the fact that the 90s had more samples. And,
yeah.
And do you think the lack of samples is why the sound is like it is nowadays? Nobody wants to pay for samples no more.
Yeah, I feel like the samples kind of bring that like soulful vibe. At least,
yeah,
like,
the soulful, yeah. Think, so. Even just a good like vocal sample over a beat or something like, Dipset, the Dipset sound on Rockefeller was a great, great time for hip hop and a great sound.
Yep.
Do you think samples is really playing a part of this, just this sound all sounds the same?
I don't know, because at the same time, like, we all make shit strictly on, like, keyboards and computers now when making beats.
Yeah,
those could be samples from, like, beat packs and shit, you know? Yeah. So it's just, like, those, like, underground type of shit.
So you don't think it comes from a place of just greed of not wanting to pay for samples? It just comes from a place of anybody can make beats now because of Fruity Loops and things of that nature.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, like, you can buy a beat pack and get all these loops and shit.
Yeah, these loops, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Then you can chop it up and make it your own. It's still like a form of sampling, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's the sound, you know what I mean? Like, it's the sound. Everyone was chopping samples back then because that was the sound. Now this new sound is progressed and everyone wants the 808s and hi-hats and stuff like that, you know?
What do you prefer? Do you prefer more sample-based beats?
Yeah,
I do.
I love a good soul sample on that shit.
Even though you always typically people say you can't distribute them because they got samples, but there's always a catch to that. Like nobody, you know, until the song is popping, nobody's knocking on your door for no sample clearances or sample fees.
Yeah, because there's like a bunch of artists like who like tour around the US and the world and sell out like 3,000 cat venues and they got samples all over their shit. It's just because it's not played on the radio and hasn't hit like someone from that team in the 70s ears yet that this dude is making money off of it, you know?
Yeah, because I heard a story with what's my man's name? French Montana. That Incredible, you remember that song Incredible he had?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was his biggest hit up to that point, and it might still be. Well, he literally, the song was already a song.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the label and was like, look, I want to buy this song, and I want to clear this sample. It's $500,000 to clear it.
Yeah.
I'll pay half of it if you pay half. And the label's like, what? Are you
on one song?
Are you shitting me? Nobody pays $500,000 to clear one fucking song.
Yeah, yep.
And he was just the strong component of, okay, I hear you, but this is a hit.
Yeah, this is the one.
This is the instant hit.
Yep.
And what did he do with it? He bought the exclusive rights out of his pocket. He threw his little bullshit 8 bars over it. Didn't say nothing.
Yep.
And it was the biggest record ever, man. I mean,
yeah, that was on like every day.
People not willing to just take that risk where they say no biscuit or no risk it, no biscuit.
Yep, yep.
I mean, because I totally, as much as I don't respect, I'm not a big fan of his music. I just was like, wow. Like, how can I not respect this cat?
Yeah.
Putting up $500,000 to clear a sample when nobody wants to spend $5,000 to clear a sample.
Yeah, and people don't even want to spend fucking 99 cents to actually buy that song. You know what I mean? He just risked it all, you know? So, you're right.
What's your take on, this is something that reeks me. Artists that think they should never have to spend a single dollar on promoting their music whatsoever.
Yeah, bro. I mean, it's going to take a 1 in a million chance, you know?
I mean, isn't that like J. Cole thinking right there? I mean, I can't. J. Cole is the last artist that I remember that just got a record deal off of one song only, no fan base.
Yeah. I mean, he just was able to reach the right person. You know,
the right person.
That's very hard to do. Not everyone can just like get access to Jay-Z type shit, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people, that's the great point you make up. A lot of people don't know how he got access to Jay-Z.
Yeah.
They don't know that Mark Pitts was his manager. Mark Pitts used to manage Tracy Lee and Biggie at one point. Mm-hmm. And then he was managing Miguel and J. Cole at the same time. So it's easy for, I always looked at it like, all right, who's the biggest Biggie Smalls dick rider on the planet? Let's think. Could it be Hov? I don't know. It might be Hov.
Yeah.
Could be Hov.
Yep.
Well, damn, if Biggie's manager is managing any artist right now, and Biggie, this is the biggest Biggie dick rider ever. Damn, if anybody should be able to get a conversation with Hov, it should be this guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, do you think every artist should be able to get on that way, or do you think different folks, different strokes?
I mean, it would be great if that's what it was and no one had to spend bread, you know? Like, that'd be awesome if I didn't have to spend all my own money on all this shit, but it's just, I don't think that's the feasible outlet, you know?
Now, even though J. Cole didn't have to spend bread, somebody had to spend bread, right?
Yeah, someone had to spend bread for J. Cole to get that studio time or whatever, you know? Just like, even just like simple shit of getting like a graphic made.
Are you familiar with Murray?
I don't think so. No.
Murray has a song called Quicksand. And Murray's from Fayetteville. And he literally got put on during COVID. And he signed because he had an old song. Investors got behind him.
Mm-hmm.
The song's got over 100 million views on YouTube. It was, they had Marshmello co-signing him.
Okay.
You're familiar with Marshmello, right?
Yep.
Marshmello is larger than life. So he had that co-sign like J. Cole did. And then they put like $250,000 worth of ads into this video. But now what the problem is during COVID, what was nobody doing during COVID?
Going to shows.
Going to shows.
Believe me, man.
And if you can't go to shows, how can you build fan base? Like these.
Yeah. And that's where you can make all your bread too, man. Yeah. Even like I'm local as fuck. Like I think my Spotify like had like 800 monthly listeners. You know, when I go to shows, man, I can make like a few $100 just like slanging t-shirts and merch and shit. That's all shit that you got to put money up for. So it's one of those things like you got to give it to get it.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up too. The merch game. I mean, that's definitely a big component for the independent artist, right? Yep. It's like, yep. one of the components. It's probably what, 33% of your income, right?
Yeah, probably more than that right now, but
probably more than that. Definitely. And how many shirts would you say you sell on a regular or whatnot at a show?
So at a show, I mean, the big breadwinner for me, like we live in New England, so it gets cold. I got these hoodies made.
The hoodies, yeah.
So if you ever go to Boston, there's this big Sitco sign, like the gas station right over by Fenway.
Yeah,
it's like a staple in the city. Like they were gonna knock it down, then it got listed as like a landmark in Boston. So I slapped that shit on the back with this right here on the front with Mass Made Media. That's the name of the label.
Yeah. And
so those are the breadwinners for me because I got hooked up with this merch guy. So I sell it for like $40. You know what I mean? And if I sell like almost 10 of those at a show, I'm walking out with like a half a day's pay at work of my day job, you know?
Do you think more artists, you made me think about the Griselda, how Griselda got on. They got on through the merch. Do you think more artists should try that kind of approach of 100%. Just brand yourself with the merch first and then let the merch sell the music?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Especially coming out and you want to like actually like support yourself doing this.
Yeah.
The people love the physical stuff. They might not cop like the physical music.
Yeah.
But like if you got a dope t-shirt or a dope hat or a dope hoodie, people are and they mess with your performance like they thought you were dope. They're probably more than willing to spend a $20 bill to buy your shirt or your hat or something. You know what I mean?
That's what we do with the Dizzle brand. The commercial I showed you with the Chip Foo, we basically got the merch too to try to help sell the liquor as well.
Yep.
You got any new shows coming up soon?
Yeah, so I got a co-headline show with CXP, the cat from my label, June 24th in Quincy, Mass. It's at this Irish pub called The Crack. We're going to get it cracking. It should be a good time.
You want to plug in your Twitters or Facebooks or Instagram or anything or a new single you got or.
Yep. You can follow me everywhere at Shawn Mikes, SHAWNMICS. You can find me on all the streaming services. I just put out a full-length album in April called The Little Things. You can listen to that. There's 14 joints on there. Yeah.
Okay. Have you messed with TikTok yet?
I tried to, bro. I don't know.
I would recommend, man. I'm going to tell you what, man. My mentor and my guy that owns Dizzle, you know, he put me on the TikTok at first, and anytime he says we got to figure something out, he really means me because I'm the So he's like, yo, we got to figure out TikTok.
Nope.
And I'm like, I was like, all right, I'll give it a chance. At first, I check it out. I'm like, this is some kiddie shit.
Yep.
Then I had like 100 followers, right? I posted this post. And it was something I think dealing with like some spacecraft video showing like something looked like a UFO or whatnot.
Yep.
But I got 70,000 views in 24 hours with 100 followers.
Yep.
And that's when I started to realize TikTok is something else because I've been doing this since MySpace days. And one thing I realized about TikTok is it's the first platform that you can't bot every single aspect of the platform. You know what I'm saying? You could bot your Instagram followers, your comments, your likes. And everything. That's been going on since MySpace and Twitter. Yeah.
Everything.
What do you think about that? Now, you think too many artists are caught up in the bot game? I know it ain't as bad as it used to be because it used to be real bad. Everybody used to hit me up like, I want to buy 1 million followers. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, the issue with that, especially now with like the algorithms and shit.
Yeah.
Like if you got a bunch of bots as majority of your followers, and Instagram is trying to share your stuff to people like the people that follow you, you're just going to get shared to more bots.
More bots, yeah.
That you're going to pop up in the bots feed and it's not going to benefit you whatsoever. It's not a real person that's going to listen to your song or listen to whatever, like peep whatever brand you're trying to push. You know what I'm saying?
And how deep do you get into the algorithms?
Dude, it's hard. I feel like they change the shit all the time. Like, it's hard because like, say like on Instagram, like I'll run this ad for a video and it works great on this one video. Say I try and do it on the second one, it fucking falls flat in its face. So they want you to just keep spending money and trying to figure it out, I feel.
Now, I know you're a busy man. We're going to cut off in like 4 or 5 minutes. I just want to ask one more question here.
Of course.
playlisting. Do you think artists, like, I know how playlisting really works. Do you think too many artists are caught up in just this playlisting, the streaming royalties? Because there's a lot of artists that ain't making no money, period.
Nope.
Whatsoever. So the streaming is all they're getting. So that's all they're caught up in.
Yep.
Do you think it's too much of a stranglehold on the music industry, the streaming royalties? Because I think it has.
If
I knew about playlisting, I think it has.
Yeah, like Spotify monopolized the shit, you know?
Yeah,
like,
they monopolized it.
If they monopolized it, and they're fucking all the artists, you know what I mean? Like they're giving you a fraction of a penny for every listen. Like, I don't know how in what world that sounds all right to anyone. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like you just, like, pitching to playlisting isn't, like, marketing for your album type shit, you know?
No, it's not. It's not, because you can't engage with fans. That's the thing. You got to be somewhere where you can engage with these fans. They don't let you engage with fans. If you're an unsigned artist and they do add you a Spotify list, it'd be one of the smallest lists. They'll add you for maybe a week, and you'll get 20,000 plays out of it, and that's it, you know? Yeah. And the major label playlists – well, we know they're botted up like crazy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're not adding nobody on there that's not
except for
major labels.
It's already popping anyway, so it's just good to juice the numbers for Billboard and not really fan engagement.
Then you get to the independent playlisters, and I would say that 90% of those are bots.
Yeah, especially the ones that guarantee you a certain number of streams, like – for $100, you will get 2,500.
I guarantee that. Like, I'll do playlist pitching, and you know, I'll add it to my playlist. Pitch it. Yep. I'll do some submissions, and I might pay for a couple guarantee slots here and there. But I'm never guarantee a specific amount of plays, because once you start doing that, that's when you know.
That's the red flag right there.
Yeah, it's totally the red flag, because even if you're selling bots and you start throwing out these numbers, we know you just totally don't care about building fan base whatsoever.
No.
And like, because I've always been a strong component of the only thing you should ever, I would not have a problem with you botting is you start a YouTube channel, they want 4,000 watch hours and 1,000 subscribers. Well, you could pay for that 1,000 subscribers, that'll get you that halfway monetized, but you still got to advertise to get that 4,000 watch hours.
Absolutely.
So I'm a strong opponent. Go ahead. You could take the shortcut to get the 1,000 subscribers, because by the time you get 4,000 watch hours, you don't build a bunch of organic fans. And 4,000 watch hours is a...
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's
so
a lot.
You done built some fan base. But that's the only time I'm like, I bought the 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. After that, straight organic. But everything else, it's like, we know... It's bots all over the place.
Yeah,
man.
It's everywhere. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I try my hardest to tell people, like, YouTube, TikTok, YouTube, TikTok, YouTube, TikTok. And it's like, yeah, I want Spotify, 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 Spotify. Okay, well, you can't put a gun to hunt somebody's head and make them listen sometimes, man.
Yep. Yeah, this year I started focusing more on the YouTube channel.
And I would recommend that.
Sure.
Focus on the YouTube as much as you can. It's the number one platform that artists are blowing themselves up on.
Yep.
TikTok is number two. Instagram would be like number three. Facebook.
Yep.
I would actually say SoundCloud over Spotify too, because some artists have
blown up from it. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I got a homie that I rap with, Honest and Clank. Like he's a nasty rhymer.
Yeah.
And he just like kind of got picked up by like these like lo-fi like boom bap rap listeners, bro, and he's got like millions of views on SoundCloud, you know what I mean? Like, so
I got a bunch of those playlists to submit to, boom baps, lo-fis. Yeah. Back in the days we were accidentally doing lo-fi hip-hop without intentionally doing, because I think Oh Boy They Said started at I did a promotion for him, what was his name, Rock Marciano, I think.
Yeah,
I used to complain about, yo, man, your levels is too low, man. They'd be like, no, that's how he likes it.
Yeah.
I never understood this was an intentional thing that he was trying to do. We just accidentally did it back in the days because we didn't go to big recording studios
stuff
like that, you know?
Yeah. Rock Marci, independent king, by the way. Independent king, for sure.
I want to thank you for coming in on the guest. You're more than welcome to come on any other time you want to. If you got like an album or press you want to get off, anything you want to tell anybody before we go?
Yeah. If you feel like supporting an independent artist, you can head to my website at massmademedia.online. I got all my music for sale. I got videos. I got some merch for sale for sure. So you can hit me up there. You can follow me on all the socials that I listed earlier. And Paul, I appreciate you having me on here. It was nice to virtually meet you, my friend.
Definitely. And more than welcome to come back on anytime. And definitely hit me up with an email when we get off of this.
All right, bet. Sounds good, bro.
All right, peace. Take it easy. All right,
you too, bro.
That was Shawn Mikes. We had a nice little hip-hop discussion. I hope y'all like that. Definitely think we got in a lot of good topics right there. Let you, you know, understand more about the artist himself. Because, see, most people, they just interview artists about their music and just things of that nature. But I'm a strong proponent that nowadays artists have to turn themselves into a reality TV show for the fans. You got to just show truly who you are, man. Just show your true colors. Just let the world know who you are. Don't hide nothing. Be comfortable in your own skin and who you are as an artist and whatnot. So definitely go check out Shawn Mikes. He said massmedia.com. We're about to get off here. We're about to plug in one more sponsor and call it a call it an episode.
You a musician looking for music marketing and promotion? Then look no further than Promo Palace LLC, your one-stop shop for all music promotion services. Services include Spotify playlist pitching, YouTube video promotion, record pool promotion, blog placements, radio airplay promotion, SoundCloud promotion, and much more. With over 2,000 customers and over 10 years of experience in online promotion, Promo Palace LLC is a company you can trust. For more info, please go to promopalace.biz. See you there.
Once again, thank you to my lovely spokesperson for Promo Palace LLC at promopalace.biz. You need online marketer promotions. Check us out. We do press releases, SEO, search engines, social media marketing, music video promotion, TikTok influencers, Instagram influencers, blog placements, and much, much more. Once again, I'll thank y'all for tuning in. Episode 153 featuring Shawn Mikes from Massachusetts, hip hop artist. Peace, and I'm out.